Welcome to the Brain Health Mission podcast, exploring how science, policy, and everyday choices shape the health of your brain and what you can do to protect it.
Hello, and welcome back to the Brain Health Mission podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jana Middelfart-Hoff, neurologist and treasurer of the European Academy of Neurology. In today's episode, we dive into a major neurological condition that affects millions of people globally, multiple sclerosis, or MS for short, and what it means to protect and enhance brain health in those persons living with it. I'm joined by two wonderful guests, Dr. Natalia Osheiko and Dr. Sanja Lucevic, neurologists and EAN Brain Health and Neurology Ambassadors, which is very cool. Welcome to both.
Thank you very much, Jana. Thank you for having us.
Let's start with some quick introductions for our listeners. Natalia, would you begin and perhaps also briefly explain what multiple sclerosis is to help ground our listeners?
Yes, for sure. Thank you, Jana. Yes, so I'm a neurologist. I was trained in Poland, where I did also my PhD. And afterwards, I also completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Yale University and currently also clinical fellowship in University of Calgary in Canada. And I'm specialized, yes, in brain health in variety of disorders, one of them being multiple sclerosis. And I'm happy and fortunate also to share with Dr. Lucevic where our shared mission in terms of multiple sclerosis, because we are both also members of the steering committee of the fellows of the European Charcot Foundation, which is an organization, a European organization gathering researchers dedicated to MS. So MS, it's, of course, we neurologists, we know what it is, but to our listeners, I'll just briefly mention that it's an autoimmune disorder that basically is causing damage to one of the parts of nervous system, which is called myelin. But we know that generally with time, there is also like an atrophy. So the brain is becoming smaller, that parts of the brain cells, they're dying. So it's a little bit complex situation, but for sure, a lot of our listeners there heard about it. And globally, we know that almost 3 million people are affected. So it's a very frequent problem. And another like epidemiological important fact that there is this female to male ratio of 3-1. Yeah, and it is highly individual disease, and it often begins in young adulthood, making brain health an important part of care and quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Natalia. That was great. Sanja, would you introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Jana. So I'm an adult neurologist. I finished my residency in Belgrade and I'm working in Montenegro. Currently, I'm finishing my education in clinical neurophysiology and epilepsy. But my fields of interest is also multiple sclerosis. And as Natalia nicely said, I'm also co-chair of this young investigators and fellows at the Charcot Foundation. So what basically we do is that we, in our small subgroup, which is called the FAIR group, females in research, we actually focus our interest in MS, but regarding all the female issues that might arise in this very important disorder.
Mm-hmm. So, dear listeners, we actually have two very highly qualified neurologists speaking on the theme today about a disease, MS, that is very widely spread and affects a lot of people. So, let's go into the brain health thing, because the concept of brain health has gained a lot of attention in neurology over the past few years. But what is actually brain health, and what does it mean in connection with having a chronic disease of the brain, as MS is, and of the nervous system, of course, too? Perhaps, Natalia, you could start.
Yeah. So, well, currently there is, as you nicely said, it is a hot topic overall. And there are different definitions of brain health. But overall, well, I think that we can generally say that it's a state of the brain functioning across different domains, because we know that our brain is responsible for many, many different functions. So for cognition, emotional functioning, sensory, social and motor domains. allowing a person to live productively, fulfilling life. So it's like a holistic concept encompassing these different domains. And what is also highlighted, and I wanted to briefly mention here, the definition of the World Health Organization, that this is a concept that is actually important across the lifespan. So it's not only, you know, we associated like brain health maybe with elderly adults, like prevention of dementia, but not really. Now we know that even at the prenatal stage, this is an important thing that we should take into consideration. And it's very important for diseases, including MS, because like I said briefly, in MS, there is a damage of the brain, which we could potentially prevent with some strategies. We're going to talk about it later. Also, there are all these different symptoms and domains that are impacted in MS, like cognition, mood disorders, sensory and motor impairments, which are also an important part of brain health. So overall, with different strategies, we can preserve and enhance brain reserve and function of the brain of our patients, for example, with MS.
Mm. Sonia, do you have anything to add?
Yes, so I would just add some points that Natalia really nice made an introduction to. So I would say that brain health is about what we do to maximize our neurological and cognitive reserve, meaning what we do to preserve the size of the brain that we as adults have, and our cognitive reserve, meaning our ability that we can learn and adapt throughout our lives, so that we have a necessary resilience actually to deal with everything that life throws at us, regardless of whether we have brain disorder or not. So regarding to MS, good brain health involves mainly preserving this neurological reserve, minimizing neuroinflammation and preventing irreversible damage. So what we can do as physicians and what we actually aim at every our contact with our patients is the early intervention. This is extremely, extremely important because it delays the time we need to diagnose and especially to treat patients, because point the diagnosis and treatment will not lead to accelerate brain atrophy. We now have a plenty of research and evidence that early intervention will shrink the ability of patients to progress more rapidly, even in the stage of radiologically isolated syndrome or clinically isolated syndrome. Also, we are having good brain health means managing actively inflammation, meaning treating relapses early, and also tackling neurodegeneration, which is now our biggest issue, with the disease-modifying treatment, and also to promote neuroplasticity, that is our brain's remarkable ability to reorganize itself by forming new connections throughout life, which can be achieved by telling our patients to engage in physical activities, cognitive activities as well, and also a leading healthier, vascular, healthier life.
Yeah. Thank you very much. You've already ventured into the next theme, which is whether there are specific challenges and opportunities in MS, because it's something quite paradoxical, actually, that you're having a disease of your brain and nervous system and still should have good brain health. It's possible. That's what you're saying, and that is so good. But can you measure good brain health? And are there any specific aspects that should be considered in MS patients? Sonia, would you start?
Yes. So I absolutely agree that we can measure brain health. I mean, it's, let's say, a new concept, but we are already using it in MS. So we all know that, let's say, classically, we use MRI for measuring lesion load and lesion activity. But now we also have more advanced techniques that help us see through more informative lesions, like paramagnetic rim lesions that are now signaling us that our patient is having more aggressive diseases that we might need to modulate or modify our treatments. We also now can measure brain atrophy rates. That is very, very important. We now know that patients with MS do age more rapidly compared to their healthy colleagues or healthy population. I mean, three times faster. So with these advanced techniques, we can really start doing things more early than we used to in 20 or 30 years ago. And also there are now biomarkers that are very extensively used, and not only neurofilament light chain that we use, it is a marker of axonal damage, but also another biomarker called GFAP. It's a shorter for glial fibrillary acidic protein, that is a marker of astrocytic activation. These are all very important information that we can now gather, so we can have more proactive instead of, let's say, sitting and waiting for the disease to show its face. And also what we do more often every day is cognitive testing via a very specialized screening tool called single-digit mortality test that identifies this early processing speed deficit, which is very important because it is related to cognitive decline, which we also must tackle at very beginning of the disease.
Mm-hmm. Sonja, for some of the listeners, could you just define what is a lesion? We know, you know me, but it's the language of a neurologist. So what is actually an MS lesion? What is happening in the brain?
MS lesion is a part of a brain that gets attacked by its own cells. So MS is an autoimmune disorder, is of course characterized by our organism fighting against its own tissue. So there is something wrong. We still don't know what actually is triggering our own immune system to attack its own tissue, but it happens. So when it happens, it leads to destruction of neural cells. So neurons, they have different parts. So one of them is also axon, which is important for communication. So axon has one layer called myelin, which enables our neurons to super fast communicate. So when we have this attack, our immune cells, when they attack our nerve structures, they unfortunately attack also these structures, myelin, especially in MS. So when this happens, we see this attack going on via MRI with really interesting patterns. Not every lesion is the same, but let's say lesion is a mark of inflammation and mark of tissue destruction at that point.
Mm. It's the wound in the nervous system,
yes.
So to say.
Yes.
Very good described. Yeah. Natalie, do you have anything to add to what Sonja said about the special opportunities and also aspects of MS and brain health?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to briefly also mention that apart from all these measurements that Sonja was mentioning, it's very important also to include clinical measurements, which include, for example, the cognitive tests, but also some emotional and psychological tests that are measuring the depression or anxiety, for example, Beck Depression Inventory or Hamilton Anxiety Scale, because we know that this is another important aspect that also mental health is very relevant. And we know that people who develop mental health issues, their brain actually ages quicker than those who do not, including people with MS. But there are also other important targets that we would like to measure, but we don't really have good tools, such as brain reserve or resilience of the brain. Sonja was talking about it. So, you know, this is the sort of our capacity of the brain to handle adversities, which we all have. Fatigue and mental energy, which is like a very, very core feature of MS generally, including mental energy, fatigue. We have some tools, but they are not very standardized. And then Sonja was also mentioning neuroplasticity potential. So we're very, very much interested generally, and we wrote together a paper about it together with our colleagues about neuroplasticity and remyelination. So the way, you know, our brain is changing and adapting, and whether actually the lesions you talked about, the wounds, could be reversed. It's also a very important concept. And we are searching for maybe, you know, MS-specific brain health measurement, but at the moment there is no such. One tool that would be clinically based, you know, only for MS. We have these different techniques that we were talking about, but not one that is MS-specific. And one last thing is that, yeah, in the literature and for our listeners, there are a lot of, like, tools in the internet that you can find to measure not only NMS, but for you as a human being, your brain health. These are very nice tools that are publicly available. I mean, in English, but they are available, such as Brain Health Index, for example, or Brain Core Score. And they're not disease specific. They're more talking, you know, about this modifiable factors that we have, all of us. But these are very nice too, that I think are the future generally. Very easy tools, but brilliant. And finally, of course, as everywhere, not only in medicine, I think that artificial intelligence and new technologies will help us also to develop, you know, tools to measure brain health better in people with MS or without MS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like what you say also about tools, but I have to say that people should be a little bit choosy and rather spend their time with friends and being physical active than to sit in front of their PC and search for their brain health index.
Yes.
So
yes.
It must be used with caution, I think, because mm-hmm. we know that social activity can't be just consumed by the PC. So we just have to think. But what you are saying is that there is vast possibility of different things to do, and there are tools to be had, and that is so cool. And what I would say is that what you're telling is that there has been a development from more retrospectivity and that we have been not so proactive towards, that we are more in our shoes and we are searching for how to change or alter the future of our patients and of persons. Wouldn't you say that? And if you should say it quite brief, why has it taken so much time for us neurologists and neuroscientists to be more interested in the future than we have been in the past? Natalia, would you be the first? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. So I think that it has several reasons. Yeah, just briefly, I think that we are more generally, not only in MS, but especially in MS. Even I wouldn't consider myself a very old neurologist, but I saw this paradigm shift, you know, in approach to MS, that we are trying to capture disease at the earliest stage possible. It is like totally reversed paradigm, because before we, you know, even the recognition of disease was based like on heavy clinical signs like damage. And now it's more, you know, the opposite. It's, we want to capture at the prodromal stage, even, that would be ideal, right? People at risk even, to prevent the development. So, and it's, I would say in the medicine overall, there is this preventive shift, not only in neurology, and including NMS. But this is related, I think, because we have generally better tools for this, including, for example, neuroimaging tools, but also the biomarkers that Sanya talked about, including also genetic biomarkers like polygenic risk scores, for example. Ideally, in the future, maybe we'll have a possibility of like a precision medicine, you know, using the polygenic risk score to capture these people who have the genetic predisposition, right? But then on the other hand, we also have better treatment that we could ideally, again, now we still have disease-modifying therapies, but maybe we will have something in the future that will even prevent disease from developing, or we will have this, for example, remyelinating strategies that will even reverse, right? Or enhance resilience of the brain. So I think for me, these are the most important points.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you also agree, Sanya? We have gone from
I agree. I mean, this is the medicine of the 21st century. So we are, I think, out from the labs and more to the bed of the patient. So I think that advancement of especially MRI has helped us a lot, and biomarkers. So I think that all these advancements that we are having now are actually borrowed from other disciplines like genetics, like immunology. So, but basically they all lead to one thing: a personalized medicine that every single human being, from my perspective, really deserves, because we are all different and one size fits all is absolutely unacceptable in 21st century.
That was very well said. Let's change the theme. I just wonder, is there a myth or a misconception about MS that you would like to put aside in this podcast? We could start with you, Sanya.
Oh, yes. One of my favorites is that MS only affects physical function And unfortunately, I deal with that on a daily basis. And that is such a myth. Unfortunately, 40 to 70% of all our patients have cognitive deficit. These are all, let's see, hidden symptoms that if we as a physicians don't ask, we won't know. And if a patient doesn't tell us, they don't know it, because the situation from Montenegro is very different from the other countries I have experienced with talking with patient advocates. People are not very well educated. So if we don't speak about these invisible symptoms, people don't know it. So when I tell them, okay, do you feel fatigue or do you feel, you know, exhausted in the middle of the day without doing anything special? And they say, well, yes, but that is because, you know, it is because of my legs hurting or I did not sleep well. And they get really shocked when I say, well, it's your disease as well. So fatigue is a part and a big, like Natalia said, crucial part of everyday life of patients with MS. And it really impacts their quality of life, their daily functioning, and even their employability, because it's very hard to explain to your employer that even if you can walk and even if you can run, you're still fatigued.
That's true. You can't see fatigue. That's true. Natalia.
I think that for me, unfortunately, still one of the big myths is that, especially when people hear the diagnosis or the caregivers or like family members, they right away, they have still this picture, unfortunately, of a person like on the wheelchair, that MS is always related to a wheelchair, or it's like a terrible disease that, you know, will definitely lead to this, and they will be like disabled people, that it's like a sentence, you know, that they will have to quit everything, I don't know, their family life, their work, and so it's still a myth that I'm dealing on a daily basis. And just I wanted to reemphasize to our listeners that it's absolutely not true. Vast majority of our patients nowadays, yes, they deal with all the symptoms, but definitely we have so many different possibilities for treatment. Many, many, many of my patients, they can function very well. We really can help them. There are so many tools, so many treatments, so many possibilities, including also non-pharmacological, for example, rehabilitation. So I would say that, at least from my clinical perspective, of course, still this can happen in very severe cases, but it's been a huge difference even during, you know, my practice. So this one important myth that we have to sort of rectify.
I totally agree with you, Natalia. And the thing that I always like to say to my patients, because yes, they really get, they're devastated when they get the diagnosis, is that now with all our treatments and everything that we do and we have as a repertoire to treat them, they live their biological age. They don't die prematurely, which is very important. 30 years ago in Montenegro, it was not the case. So their lifespan was really shortened. So I think it's a really good message to tell the people, okay, you will live 80s, 90s, is not a problem.
Yeah, that is so good. And if this podcast episode can get rid of that stigma, that would be so cool. And I'm from Norway, one of the most prominent politicians in Norway. He has MS and he's open about it. I think openness is a key word here, that people who are affected can see that other persons, they manage to have good lives despite of their disease. And that is so good. But we need to go back a little to brain health, and we need to get personal as well, because what can we in general do to protect our brain health? What do you do, ladies, in order to improve your brain health? If we could start with Natalia.
Well, several things, but I mean, if I have to pick like one, I'm doing my best also to introduce in my daily activities reading. I'm reading, as all of you, a lot of medical literature, but I'm very hopeful, and we know from the studies that it's so important, and generally for us as human beings, for me, because I love humanities, you know, and I think it's a very important for a doctor to be human too. So literature. So I really want to come back, for example, to Ulysses of James Joyce. You know, I think it really will help with my brain health. And I really want to encourage listeners, please read books. It's so important. Not only look into the screens. And if you have a time and opportunity, also if you have children, promote book reading. It's so important. yes, this would be my top.
This is a super tip. Thank you. And for you, Sanya, what to do in general and what do you do for yourself?
For myself, well, I'm trying to be physically active. I mean, as a neurologist, it's very hard. And being a mother of two, it's very demanding. But I think that exercise is something that really, really helps our brains stay sharp and healthy. I mean, we have plenty of evidence why exercising is important. And I'm really trying, especially to my older child, to say how important is physical activity, especially in the teenage years, and how physical inactivity is, on the other hand, linked not only to shrinkage of the brain, but also to mood disorders, which are extremely prevalent. So I think that if we want to have more things with one healthy habit, I think that is definitely physical activity, because you will have sharper mind, you will have more balance, more resilience at the end, and of course, better mental health.
So if the listeners get one thing or two out of this, is that when they finish this podcast, they should pick up a book and later on go for a run or a stroll.
Yeah, or even walk.
Would you agree on that?
Small non-sweaty activities are good for our brain. Even walk.
Yeah, that's true. I also think that you have to find something that gives you pleasure.
Yes.
When it comes
absolutely.
To physical activity, but also when it comes to cognitive activity, whether it's to play an instrument or to read a book or to paint a painting, it has to give you pleasure, because otherwise the brain doesn't want to do it.
Yes, it's
true. You
can do
it a couple of times. So I think that is a good thing. And then you already said it, but what are there any other things that you in particular advocate to your patients?
Of course, the diet, you know, the healthy diet. I mean, in MS, it's been also like a hot topic, as in other, you know, diseases a couple of years ago. Also, because of the relationship with microbiome, we know there's this gut-brain axis is also extremely important. But actually, at the moment, the only diet, it's not very surprising that it's been demonstrated to have to be beneficial for people with MS is Mediterranean diet. So as for other disorders, of course, I recommend this to my patients. And I always ask also about, you know, habits, lifetime habits, such as smoking or other addictions. And then, well, I try to encourage my patients to, if they are smoking, I discuss with them that, well, of course, it's not good for brain health, but generally we know that people who smoke with MS, they have more relapses, they have worse course of disease. So it's a very important factor. And so I think it's another one that on top of my head that I would definitely consider. And then I have, like, you know, my list of symptoms that I always talk about. Like I said, for me, mental health is very important, although I'm a neurologist and a psychiatrist, but briefly I discuss. So if there is like a need for intervention in mood disorder, I try to do it myself or refer the patient if necessary, again, because I want to reemphasize for our listeners that mental health is very crucial, and sleep, because if the sleep is also impacted in patients with MS, and generally in all of us, it has a very deteriorating impact on brain health. So yeah, I try to discuss the sleep hygiene with my patients and even refer them to some resources, habit reversal training if they have insomnia. And there are also very nice books in English. For example, Say Goodnight to Insomnia. I can recommend you guys. Yeah, that would be my tips.
Sanya nods very heavily when you talked about sleep, even though she's the mother of two children, and to have small children is not always a guarantee for sleeping very well. But then again, Sanya, are there any things that you would like to add that you take up with?
Yes, I mean, all of us that are treating patients with MS, we are getting more and more older patients with MS. So it's also very important to talk about brain health, let's say in third age. So I always encourage my patients. I mean, they all have more disabilities. So if they come alone, that is a red flag for me. So I always try to talk to them to see if they have some social support, which is very important and is also very interconnected with mood disorders and the risk of getting dementia. So I always try to find a way to ask them, okay, do they live alone? Do they have any social support? And of course, I always promote that if they have friends which are willing to spend time with them or to play, I don't know, all kinds of social games like Sudoku, puzzles, chess, whatever, which is very important for their brain health. And I also talk with them a lot, maybe more than I speak with my younger patients about sleep deprivation, because we know there is now definitely a link with neurodegenerative disorders and lack of sleep, because our system that is clearing the waste from the brain is only active when we sleep. So when we don't sleep, the waste stays in the brain. All the comorbidities in patients with MS are not just the silent bystanders. They really affect our patients with MS even more, and they also affect our treatment strategies. So I always discuss blood pressure, diabetes, lipidemia, so all the factors we can address in that age to help them more.
Mm-hmm. So what we have learned in this episode is that persons with MS should be looked upon as whole persons, not excluding, not having this division between mental health and physical health and so on. And what you also said here, Sanja, is that MS is a chronic disease. It lasts throughout life. So all aspects have to be considered as you age. And also that we have to have a society that is aware of that. That MS is not a disease that you have in a certain age of life, but it remains with you, even though, and we have to say that as well, treatment has improved very much. So many people can have some symptoms, but not a symptom load as previously, but still they live with a chronic disease, and that must be catered for. This was a very good podcast. I learned a lot from both of you, and I think this was also very useful for the listeners and also for their relatives, caretakers, and so on, who have persons in their surroundings who have a chronic neurological disease, but still can do a lot for their brain health or can be helped to improve their brain health. So thank you so much, Natalia and Sanja, for joining me on this podcast. And thank you to all listeners for listening in. And if you enjoyed this episode of the Brain Health Mission podcast, please follow us on your preferred podcast platform, share it with your network, of course, and stay tuned for more conversations on brain health. Very important. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to the Brain Health Mission podcast, where science meets action for a healthier brain. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or your favourite podcast app so you never miss an update. For more tools, tips and expert insights, head to brainhealthmission.org. That's brainhealthmission.org. A special thank you to our supporting partner Roche for supporting our mission. Until next time, take care of your brain. It's the only one you've got.